Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon, episode 80 for August 1st, 2009, Scum VM. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libre and open source software in great detail. Joining us once again, our open source fellas, Mr. Randall Schwartz. Great to have
Leo.
You. Author of Learning Perl, a Perl programmer, now a Seaside expert, which is some sort of weird variant of small talk. And also there, John, I hear him laughing, John O'Bacon.
Hello.
Community manager for Ubuntu, The Art of Community is his new book out in bookstores soon.
Indeed. August 21st. Now.
August 21st. Well, that is soon.
It's very soon.
It's like 3 weeks.
Scarily soon.
Yay!
And may I say, Leo, welcome back to you, to your own show. I mean, we had to hold the fort down while you were off.
This is not my show. This is your show, really. But I just, I like to sit in and keep an eye on things. You were here, weren't you? You were in the studio.
I was physically, last week's show, I actually was physically, not actually, well, it's 2 weeks ago for people listening on the feed here, but I was actually physically at the Twit Cottage, which was really ironic because I was there in the cottage doing Floss Weekly while you were on a geek cruise.
Which is totally a reversal of the normal roles, yeah.
We normally went the other way around, so it was actually
we missed
cool.
You. I was there. We missed you on the geek cruise, by the way. It's not the same without Randall there.
I really wanted to go, but it just the timing didn't work out, and a lot of other things didn't work out. And I'm actually kind of I'm kind of happy in some senses, though, because I got to come into the cottage, and I was there a few days ahead of OSCON, which was last week, the following week. And one of the things I got to do was I got to hang out with Chris Marquardt for a few days, driving him nuts, of course, with my bad puns. But I did his Street Safari workshop.
Oh, and, fun!
I wouldn't have been able to do that if I had gone to China. So it's actually great that I got a chance to shoot with that. I got some amazing pictures. If you go to Flickr.com/Randall-Schwartz or just Google for my name on Flickr, you'll see some I've got a few that are I'm going to actually get blown up in fine art print because they're just that good. I've been confirmed by everybody. So really had a great time with that. And OSCON, of course, was nonstop craziness for me. I taught complete small talk day on the first day. And I had all day Wednesday. I was handing out 1,000 T-shirts for people to come to the Stonehenge Linux Fund party. Then I had to, do that night. Then I had another talk, the first slot on Thursday morning. So here after my party, I had to come in the next morning and do another small talk. But it was incredible. Caught up with some old friends. It was a great, great experience. And too bad you missed all that. I didn't bump into Jono there, right? So I saw you at least once or twice there, right?
Yeah, it was good to finally see. Well, I think I met you for the first time back in February, was it, at Scale?
So
it was
Scale,
good to actually meet
Scale,
again after this whole Floss Weekly thing has kicked off again for me. So, yeah, it was great to meet you, and I saw you handing out your horrifically colored T-shirts that were bright pink, bright yellow.
There's a good look.
The point of that was that as you were stumbling back home from the party, you wouldn't get hit by any cars. So it was a safety yellow, real bright neon.
But they had the penguin and the BSD devil on them, right? Is that them?
Yes, they did. That's it. Very good. Yes, what you're pulling up there on the screen.
I'm on your Flickr stream. I'm just looking for the good pictures. Where would those be?
Those are well.
No. These are all the OSCON party pictures.
Go to my sets and go drill down three sets or so.
It does look like it was a fun party, though.
It was an incredible party. It was a lot of fun, and I got a lot of pictures of.
Unlike many nerd parties, there were actually women there.
Yes.
Which kind of stuns me. I guess open source is the place to be.
It appears to be, yes, definitely. And also, I just want to say that from last week's show, the DHH having David Heinemeier Hansen on the show, I've gotten so much feedback, positive feedback about that show.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Tim O'Reilly only a few weeks ago before that, definitely landmark show, but this show that I had with DHH, again, another landmark show. There's a few that argued we didn't beep out enough. There's a few that said we're all adults, why beep at all? But it's okay. It was a good compromise.
Yeah, no. I don't think we had a problem. We beeped a little bit and then left most of it.
Yeah, but it was a great show. Great, it was good talking one on one with another programmer. I mean, it was a pretty intense show.
I'm gonna have to go back and listen to that one then. Yeah.
It's a wonderful. It's definitely something. If you haven't heard it already, go back and rewind one show. It's in last week's show. So, but I just had a great time with that show, and we got that together all at the last second because I didn't even know that I was going to be able to do a show. So again, Dave, I thank David for coming in at the last second for that one.
Well, great. So, now today we're going to talk about scum.
Mm-hmm. Not just scummy things. Not just things by the side of your pool.
Scum.
Not the usual scum.
Scum. What are you talking about, scum? What is that?
We have actually one of the project leads of the Scum VM, which is a virtual machine that can run a number of different kinds of old adventure style games back from, maybe as far back as 20 years ago when, we didn't have all these first person shooters and the high advanced graphics chips. We had to kind of put all of our pictures in 320 by 240, big old blotchy bits, 16 colors sometimes, but we still wanted to tell a good story and have a good sort of interaction, a good play with the game. And there's a lot of these games like Monkey Island and a bunch of other ones like that. And ScumVM is a modern program designed to run all those old games if you happen to already own a legal copy of them. And we have, I mispronounced his name 6 times on previous shows, and I still don't know if I'm going to get it right.
Eugene Sandulenko.
Sandulenko. Okay, something kind of like he's Ukrainian. And so
if I say it like Eugene Sandulenko, it's easy to say.
He's
all about the accent.
Exactly.
I won't say that when he's on the air, however.
Please don't. He erased his parts. He won't hear it in the final production.
Actually, his English is fantastic. Very little accent. But he is talking to us from his neighbor's house. I guess he had a problem with his internet service provider. So
from his secret underground lair somewhere in Ukraine.
Staying up late and joining us right now, Eugene Sandulenko from the Ukraine. Eugene, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
It's great to talk to you. I understand you're in your neighbor's house.
Yeah.
Well, thank your neighbor for letting us use his internet connection.
Yeah, I got a problem here with my ISP because of thunderstorms. They were a pretty heavy thunderstorm.
Oh, wow.
And everything fried. So it's not fun.
So Randall, why don't you wade right in?
So Eugene, tell us a little bit about the ScumVM. We talked a little bit about it in the opening, but I want to hear your description of what ScumVM is all about.
Well, ScumVM is a set of virtual machines for playing adventure games. And those adventure games basically are mostly classics. And what we are doing, we re-implementing those engines which run them, and it lets to run the games over 20 platforms, from handhelds to consoles to your desktop, whatever. And the games which we are working with, they are ranging from LucasArts like Monkey Island, Dig, Full Throttle. Then we have Sierra, AGI, and SCI, like Leisure Suit Larry, etc., Space Quest.
So let me understand this then. So you have LucasArts over the period of time that they were producing games. Instead of building over and over again a brand new way to put dots on the screen and interact with users with a verb-noun sort of interactions, they started with just one engine, or maybe variations on one engine, and that was called Scum, right?
Exactly. The games before they were created from the ground, each one, and they were not portable. Like when you created a game for Commodore 64, you have to redo it to run it on a PC. So what they invented, they wrote a language which called Scum. And they wrote a virtual machine, just like Java today. And they run it on a number of platforms. And that's how let them to easily port even to Nintendo and to NES,
So simply by porting the Scum engine, they could to a new platform. Already, their whole catalog of games could come along and work on whatever the new platform was.
Exactly, and after LucasArts, other companies like Sierra and others, they picked up the idea and they created started to create their adventure games with use of these of their own engines. And ScumVM, we implement many of those engines. Currently, there are about 16 of them, and new ones are under development. So it's not just about Scum today, but about number of point-and-click adventure game engines.
So these games that will run under ScumVM, do you have to go into eBay and find some old boxed set with 5 1/4 inch discs in there? Or how do you get these? Are these games freely available?
I'm guessing not, but I'd like to hear the answer.
Well, yes, you have to own original, and right. We encourage you users to buy original. Also, number of those games there are being sold even today, and you know that recently even LucasArts they released a couple of their games on Steam, but they are fortunately are specifically made ScumVM incompatible. But also there are different set of games. We collaborate with intellectual property owners of those games, and eventually they freeware or give us a source code of those games. And for instance, we have Flight of the Amazon Queen game. We have Beneath a Steel Sky. It's another freeware game which was made specifically freeware for ScumVM. And also, we are under good negotiations with Terry Pratchett and eventually freewaring Discord games. You know, those were pretty famous in this.
So if you're supposed to own it sounds great the fact that a lot of the games are being made freeware so people can run them and play them, particularly as they're about 10 years old. If for the other games that you do need to buy, I mean, can you really still buy these games? I mean, they're pretty ancient. I mean, are you expected to try and find a copy, or is it one of these situations where you're supposed to buy the game?
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
They're actually available on someone's website.
A wink is as good as a nod to a blind man. Don't forget.
No. Yeah, we have a strict anti-piracy policy in our project. And we give no support, absolutely no support, as soon as we get to know that somebody used pirated version. And actually, it distracts a certain type of users in our project, but it serves good to the project because we sleep well in the night, you know. Also, we have a good collaboration with IP owners, like even some guys which created games like those, I forgot, Alcachofa Soft or something like that from Spain. They approached us and gave us sources and eventually their games. It calls Dracula, it's Humorous Adventure. And it would be not possible if we would not have such a strong anti-piracy policy. That's why.
That sounds great.
Yeah, the games are under sale and on sale on eBay, on Amazon, and only few quite rare versions, like from FM Towns, it's a Japanese computer. Most of other games you can buy under $20.
For those that aren't familiar with games like the original Maniac Mansion and Indiana Jones, now this is not like a first-person shooter like, say, Doom or Quake or anything like that. This all predates that, right?
Yeah.
And so what's it like playing one of these games? What are you looking at? What's on the screen?
Oh, it's about adventure. It's a story. What you like in a good book is a story, and what you like in a good adventure is also a story. In shooter, It's all about your reflexes, nothing else. But Monkey Island or Indiana Jones, they give you a good, really good story. And even you know that movies, they were filmed after some games. And some games were written after movies, but not in the manner of current, name it like Doom 3, which they recently filmed. It's a, it's not a good thing. But and this story is interesting. It is entertaining. It's humorous in most occasions, and you like to replay it over and over again, just like you like to reread a good book many times.
So generally, the interface is like a 2D view. It's not even like a 3D view. It's more like a 2D view, or 2.5D, I think we call it, with some depth to it. And you're moving a character around on the screen, or maybe multiple characters, and you're
it's
interacting
kind of adventure,
a bit with the mouse.
Adventure-like, too, right?
Yeah. It's interactive movie, interactive cartoon, I would say.
Yeah.
Right.
Displayed.
Is it a case of are most of the games graphical, or is it a case, or is it one of these, you know, oh no, I've been killed by an ampersand kind of games?
They're mostly graphical.
Can you move the character around, or do you have to type in, you know, I walk towards the tree and cast a spell kind of stuff?
There were two schools of adventure games. One was by Sierra, and they had. Initially, they had all interface with typing commands, like just you said, like sharpen your knife or do whatever. And LucasArts, they did it differently. They had a point-and-click interface, and eventually, in time, it developed to avoid verbs completely, and they used pictographic. Like Curse of Monkey Island, which is broadcasted right now, it doesn't have any verbs, and only text which you can read there. It's about it is about subtitles, but no word typing, nothing like that.
You could see that we showed, for those who are watching at home, we showed Manic Mansion and then Monkey Island. And Manic, you could see the development of these games, but all of these play on Scum VM just fine.
Yeah,
that's great.
And moreover, they play often better than original.
Well, of course, you've got a lot more horsepower in there.
not only that, because we quite often we fix original bugs. If you know that sometimes because of deadline they rush in the production, and some bugs left unattended, and especially after 10 years of playing, you know the game better, and we fix those bugs in most occasions when it is possible, and also we enhance graphics and do other things like. For instance, some of the games, they were run on Roland MT32. It's a big MIDI device which produced superb sound. And we have one emulator inside which for this device, which gives you this superb sound on your modern computer, which will be quite difficult to connect, especially to modern modems, etc.
I imagine that they play a lot better as well, because the last time I played these games, I had a bowl haircut. And
you look better while you're playing them. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Do you think, but leading on from that, do you think the reason why people have a lot of fascination, because I know tons of people who love Scum VM and the excellent work that you folks do on this. Do you think that the main reason why people like to run it is for pure kind of looking past and nostalgic purposes? Yeah. Or do people actually continue to play the games, or do they stick them on for 5 minutes, feel like they were 16 again, and then go back to Duke Nukem?
Nukem.
We have this nice old thread on our forums, which is called "How old are you?" Some of our visitors, he started it. And if you will look through it, there are some guys, like, they say they are over 40, but there are some guys which say that I'm 13 years old.
Yeah.
So there is a... and, you know, if you will take a look at modern market of games, Duke Nukem and Quake and Doom, whatever, first-person shooter, they just... they everywhere. And people started to deviate. They never saw a real game with a good story. They never saw a real game. They are about those triangles, cool graphics,
right.
And no sense at all.
I'm with you on that, Eugene. A great game is very playable, even if it's not as modern. It's the gaming that makes it so playable and so enjoyable.
Exactly. And take a look. LucasArts, they recently released Monkey Island 2nd Edition, so-called, when they just skinned the old game with new higher resolution graphics. And the story is the same, and albeit that it is almost 20 years old, the story is still really good and funny. I recommend to play it.
It's Does really that good. Mean that for this kind of stuff, they had to have better writing than, say, just a typical shoot 'em up game? Oh, I mean, this is real art. This is real storytelling. And especially to have multiple paths through it, or at least have multiple options at each point. Is this sort of a hearkening back to an era that we've somehow maybe partially lost?
Yes, definitely. Because with those shooters, I don't like current games. It's just exactly what you just told. You look at it for 5 minutes and you saw practically everything of it, and there is no depth. And it you just go there, you just wonder, you kill somebody, and no sense in it at all. But with these games, like, everybody likes to read Shakespeare. Why? It's centuries old, but it's a good story. It's a good wording. The sentences, they are built beautifully. Like Monkey Island, it has excellent humor, and when you replay it, you understand the nuances of it, and it adds to it much, and you like it, and you can even quote the game later in your real life.
There is, there's this whole discussion about the fact that these are, like old movies, old TV shows. These games are really a creative art that is kind of being ignored by these companies. Yeah, they may still want to assert their rights to it, but frankly, there's no money to be made in most cases for it. So companies like LucasArts are just letting them go. And there's a whole kind of period of our history and a whole period of our creative history that's lost because you can't play them anymore. So it's great that you're keeping this alive. I mean, to be honest, I think piracy is a minor concern here. Most of these games, these companies,
yeah,
I mean, they don't care anymore, do they?
I hate to bring a little bit of controversy to the show, but I think I completely disagree with the premise that just because these games were more sentence driven, that the storyline was better. I think anyone who owns a PlayStation 3 or a modern gaming console or whatever else, the quality of the writing and the storytelling that goes into modern games, I think it would be remiss for us to assume that it's not particularly good compared to these games, because the work that goes into modern games is really, really good as well. And I think it's tempting as well for us to kind of look back to nostalgia and say, well, because the graphics were a little bit crap, the storylines must be way better.
I'm going to dissent a little bit, because I think there's a real focus now on first-person shooters and games, that are totally graphically focused. And so there is some of the story can take a backseat. The office that I'm in right now was occupied until we moved in by a group of people who had written a LucasArts game. I think it was... It was either Monkey Island or Sam and Max. But anyway, they'd written one of these style games, and they were creating a new vampire-based game, which they released. Beautiful graphics, story-driven. I don't think it sold very well. It was released last Halloween because people, the customers are not demanding story. They're demanding great graphics and exciting adventure.
I think a lot of it depends on the kind of game. So, like, comparing Monkey Island to... something such
Far
as
Far Cry, say.
Yeah. It's comparing Monkey Island to something such as, Unreal Tournament is like comparing apples and oranges,
right,
But if you look at games like Silent Hill and BioShock
had today, it was a wonderful game.
It's just remarkable. And even games like Modern Warfare, it's just really good. But
BioShock
anyway.
Stood out because it was so different from what was being done out there and really did have a storyline to it.
Hey Eugene, how does this compare to a full emulator stack? In other words, could I just take one of these games that
like
are on the
DOS
original
box,
distribution?
Yeah.
Like in DOSBox or something. How would this compare to that?
Well, first, Scambium is not an emulator.
Okay.
Many people, they call it, but it is not. We have a couple of emulators, but those for the sound chips, mostly. And Scambium is re-implementation of a virtual machine, and we run it, not emulator, but natively. Consider that those games, they are written with bytecode or specially designed programming languages, which have special commands for moving actor or putting an item into an inventory, etc., etc. And we run Gut on ARM 66 megahertz. That means Nintendo double screen console. So no emulators, they struggle there because of low power, low memory, etc. But since we are running natively, we have C++ in the engine, and we have definitely or a lot of lesser demand for CPU and memory. When DOSBox, you can run well on your mobile phone or on your handheld, but you can run Scambium pretty well almost everywhere on your microwave.
So rather than take the code
oh, that's
for
good.
The, yeah, great. Yes, I like that.
So finally, rather, something to do with my microwave.
Rather than having the Scum code, whatever the specifics of the game are, then talk to the Scum original engine, which then translates it to DOS calls, which then has to go through a DOS emulator for your native operating system. You're sort of eliminating that third layer then.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
This would be great on the iPhone.
Yes, and Scambium, and it works very really great on iPhone.
Wow! So is there a Scambium for iPhone on the?
Yes.
Oh wow, that's great.
There is Scambium for PlayStation 3. It runs well there for in PlayStation 2 emulator mode. And there is Scambium for Windows CE for Symbian OS. It's hard to tell where Scambium doesn't run.
Yeah.
Does it run in Scambium?
That's a little too recursive for me. I can't handle that. So, but again, what you're doing is you're recreating the engine that LucasArts used to create these games. So they were writing for an engine, and you by recreating the engine, you've kind of.
In fact, we already finished recreating Scum engine like 5 years ago, and we moved to other engines. And what we do if a new platform is on the market, appears on the market, Scambium is one of the first things which gets ported there, because the porting efforts are pretty minimal, like 2 weeks of work for a single programmer, and you get Scambium running on a new platform, and that today it means you will run over 150 adventure games on your platform.
Is it written in C?
Yeah, C++.
And did you have to reverse engineer the P code language, or did you have help from LucasArts in recreating this?
Well, if we'll talk about LucasArts, there were certain reverse engineering techniques. But we have about, I believe, 6 or 7 engines there, which we got original source code and we ported the source code.
So having the source code makes a huge difference.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question in terms of, again, I used to love playing, some of the types of games. I remember around the time when people were beginning to put CD-ROM drives into their computers, and we started seeing all of these games coming out, like Under a Glass Moon and Seventh Guest. Yeah. I saw that Seventh Guest is supported. You know, these kinds of CD-based games, are they supported in Scambium as well?
Seventh Guest is supported pretty well.
Wow.
Under a Killing Moon, it's one engine which is being worked on, but slowly, because it is outside of the team. One particular guy, he appeared last year, and he told that he would like to work on it.
That's great.
And we have compatibility list on our website. Broken Sword games. Also, there is a Mist and Driven on work by one of the Scambium developers. But again, it's not yet in the tree. And
so it's not just this Lucas engine. I mean, those are different engines, aren't they?
It was we added first non-LucasArts engine, I believe, in 2002, 7 years ago.
Okay.
We just keep Scambium name because it became a trademark today.
Right.
Everybody knows, and changing the name would give us nothing, but we will lose a lot of people.
Yeah,
people know it. And it's not about Scum for There are about 20 SCUMM-based games and 130 of other games supported by SCUMM-VM are not SCUMM.
Now, somewhere in the FAQ, I saw that you aren't encouraging new development of SCUMM games because there's not any tools for that, and there are other engines like Z Machine for stuff like that. Is that true?
Yes, we don't encourage to develop for SCUMM engine particularly because SCUMM itself is trademarked. And we had in the past, and yeah, it's like a recurrent problem with LucasArts lawyers. They tried to shut down the project because they thought that we are distributing their games. And our position and our policy, anti-piracy policy, it's helped us to save the project, actually.
I see why you're so adamant about that, then. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it looks like they, when they have a rotation of lawyers in LucasArts, they approach us. A new lawyer tries to approach us and say over and over again same things. And basically, they have no. There is no violation of any law in any country with SCUMM-VM so far, and that's why they did not succeed. And also, recently, there was a really interesting situation with Atari. Maybe you remember, you read about it. Mm-hmm. What they did, they took SCUMM-VM and started to sell it under their own trademark.
That's terrible.
Yes, and yes, because it's not terrible to sell SCUMM-VM because sold out software... then goodoldgames.com, it's another service. They are selling SCUMM-VM and they do it pretty good. But they comply to GPL. It's a GNU license, which SCUMM-VM is under it. But those guys didn't. And what happened there? They apparently subcontracted work to a Canadian company, which subcontracted, it's funny to say, but to Ukrainian company, which decided to skip over the porting war.
Why write just, it? It's already been
just
done.
Fuck SCUMM-VM and start selling. That's what happened.
Wow.
And there was, we approached the GPL violations org, you know that company, and they helped us. They gave us a lawyer, and we started negotiations with them. And we decided to settle it down before going to court. And you can read about details on my blog, sale-notes@blogspot.com. I wrote it like last month. And those two guys, which were under, which performed all the paperwork, they cannot talk about it because they obliged by the law.
Right.
So this is a problem, but that Atari wanted something, I guess, for the Wii then, right?
Yes. And the problem of Atari is that they used Nintendo. It was for Wii, yes. And they used Nintendo SDK for that. And Nintendo SDK cannot be open sourced, obviously. And by linking, again, GPL, and they put themselves in a law, in the clash situation, when they cannot release the source to GPL, and from the other hand, they cannot continue selling the game because they are violating the GPL. So it settled down that they have a grace period when they have to sell all their stock, and then all remaining copies have to be destroyed, and also Free Software Foundation got a quite nice donation. Because of that.
Good.
So it was so this, like...
This is an example of where the GPL actually worked in order to prevent someone from misappropriating something that you guys have put your time and energy into and then use in a way that was really unintended and without even acknowledging it, from what I understand. I mean, there was no disclaimer in the box that said, you know, this was generated by the SCUMM-VM project.
I think Atari didn't even know, I bet you.
Exactly. Atari didn't even know because they subcontracted it.
Right.
They just checked. The game worked well. as you just saw on the
it works the really well. Yeah, yeah.
And we found certain bugs which were in Scambium only, and they were present on this on the console. And we also take a look into the engine, and it had all the copyright and all the credits to Scambium team inside, but it was not visible on the screen.
They didn't bother to take those out. They just it
sounds like you should put a back door in ScumVM that you could always do left, right, up, down, or something, and up pops up a screen that says this was built with ScumVM.
Yeah.
That would be
cool.
Secret back door.
Yes, there is one. Of course there is one. Wink, wink. Yeah. everybody knows that.
So what's the smallest thing other than the iPhone that ScumVM has been ported to?
Nintendo Double Screen. It's the weakest platform. And also there is a Game Park 32, a Korean handheld platform, which runs on ARM. But unfortunately, the porter is not active anymore, so we stuck in like 0.8 or something like that. I mean, 2 years old ScumVM.
Is that the GPX 32? That little handheld.
GPX 32 is a successor of this platform, exactly.
Right. Cool. Because aside, my only claim to fame is going on TV to review the GPX 32 on a gaming show. And one of the things they said was the fact that it was running ScumVM. That's where I first heard about the project.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Wow. It runs great on that. Wait, it runs great on this older machine. I'm sure it runs, you know, great on other machines as well. So
65 megahertz, that's all you need.
So, yeah. Eugene, how much of your time do you spend playing these games versus working on ScumVM versus working on the rest of your life?
Well, Randall, to be honest, I finished only one or two games.
I knew it. Nobody plays these has the time to do any work.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer to hack on ScumVM than playing those games. And I spent not that much because of the daily job. I don't have a lot of time for that. Maybe like 4 hours per week. And but we have currently 45 active developers.
Wow.
Mm.
This shows you games are big business.
Yeah. And it's a lot of, there is a lot of work for guiding the project, for PR work, emails, organizing developers. I also organizing the release cycle, and currently we are gearing towards attention 1.0 release of ScumVM.
Wow.
Will be next one. Yes, it's a milestone, because before that we were officially beta, but now we are going stable, and that's what we are working now, even today.
That's great. Congratulations.
How do you coordinate this? Is this SourceForge or some other system?
Yeah, SourceForge. We have SourceForge, we have IRC channel, we have developers list, we have wiki, all modern means.
Cool.
So many of the games that are running in ScumVM, you know, ScumVM sounds great, but it sounds like some of the games that have been released have they been released under an open source license? I mean, can you get the source code to some of the games?
Yes, Beneath Steel Sky has its original engine released as open source.
Oh, that's neat.
But of course, if you want to know how some particular games works, just take a look at ScumVM source. It's there.
I was just wondering because what could be quite cool is, you know, to say take a game like under a Steel Sky, whatever else games are out there, and obviously do mashups and do changes, and you know, maybe
wouldn't
maybe
that be could, fun? Yeah,
maybe Leisure Suit Leo or something.
That's a great idea.
People do that already, and Leisure Suit Larry already is supported by ScumVM, and there is this superb AG Studio. And also SCI Studio for later Sierra games, where you can alter those games. But of course, you will not be able to distribute them because of the copyright on the characters, on the game data, etc. But you can create your own games, and there is a fan base of game creators for those engines. And all, of course, they are run well under Scambium. And so you can create game which will be run for under Scambium, just not with Scam engine. Use right. anything else, but not Scam. Because, right. or you can use Scam, but expect lawyers from LucasArts to ring your doorbell next day.
Wow, it's amazing that they're so actively
yes,
protecting
they
it.
Actively defend it. They, but you see, they started to sell it just last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
On Steam.
Steam, okay, so that somebody wanted to know that. So when I'm playing these games on Steam, I'm using their original Scum.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Aaron Giles from Maine, you know him maybe, you heard about him.
Mm-hmm.
He ported original Scum under Windows, modern Windows, and they use it in Steam releases. And they specifically made those Steam releases incompatible with Scambium by hiding one of the essential data files inside of an exe.
Oh, interesting.
No.
It's easy. It's easy to work. It's like 5 minutes hack to make it
so
work.
So people know how to remove that data and make it work.
Well, perhaps at least the Scambium developers they do, but we would like to talk to LucasArts and to find out their own position.
Well, yeah, because that's a way that you could get the games now, get them on Steam.
Yes, you can, but unfortunately, you will be able to run them only under Windows.
Right.
That's LucasArts' position. And we don't want to intercept with that. At least we will find out about their attitude, real attitude, not from somebody from the lawyer department, but from somebody from their management. And perhaps it will be a good chance to collaborate with them and finally resolve this situation with this legal situation. And even we would like to help them to run these games on those new cool new platforms, because Scambium is about portability. And they just can take it, sell it, and the only thing they have to do is mention Scambium, provide source code for Scambium, comply to GPL. That's it. And no effort for developing for 14 those games. It runs well on iPhone, even today on Wii, on PlayStation 2, whatever else.
I presume you have to jailbreak the iPhone, or is there a Scambium app in the Apple Store? You must have to jailbreak it, right?
Well, in fact, Scambium is in Apple Store. One Israel company, they release Flight of the Amazon Queen game. It runs with Scambium.
Oh.
So you can officially buy it for $5, install on your iPod and play with Scambium.
But could you get any other games in there now that you have Scambium on there? Probably not.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
So it's a bundled product at that point.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you have 45 active developers now. Are you looking for other developers, and what kind of particular skills would they need?
Definitely. We are looking, and we have a good procedure for entering new developers. They need to know C++. They have to be proficient with it, and they have to love adventure games, because they will be work on. And they need to have a desire to enter our team, and we open. What they need to do is to submit some patches to our patch tracker. We will review them, and they just tell about their desire to enter team. For example, one guy, he ported Scambium to Google Phone, and he is about to join us and make this his port.
Hey, an Android yes. Scum, that's great.
Mm-hmm. And you already can find it in the Android market. You can use Scambium, download and install, and it will work with any games supported by Scambium.
Neat. It's amazing. I mean, we really have enough power now in our handhelds to play these games.
It's incredible.
Yeah, we had to have a whole computer to play a few years ago.
So, Eugenia, got to ask, Vi or Emacs?
Sorry? Why?
VI or Emacs?
I think he's using Windows.
Oh.
Yeah, well, he's running this on BSD. You're running Skype on BSD, so That's pretty impressive.
XMX.
XEMX, all right.
XEMX, ooh, here we go.
Yeah.
The X stands for extra. Yes.
I have one final question. So while you folks have been talking, I've been looking on eBay, and I found the seventh guest for $8.
All right.
Yeah, ooh. So if I buy this disc... Not anymore.
First of all, do you have a floppy diskette anywhere? You know?
So this is a CD. This is a CD-ROM.
Okay.
But my question is that when I get this CD-ROM, how do I actually get it working inside ScumVim? How do you get the original files working? Do you just copy them to a directory and then load them in? Is that how it works?
Exactly. You just copy them and feed this directory to ScumVim, and it will pick up and run.
Easy as that.
Easy as that.
That's great.
That was a great game, boy.
Yeah.
I'd love to play that again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Spooky.
When Donner gets this, you'll have to have him bring it up to the cottage for a while there, Leo.
Yeah, I'll bring it up.
It's just down the street, so yeah.
Exactly, bring it on.
Leo needs one more thing to do. Yeah, right, great. Yeah, just great. Perfect. Eugene, thank you so much. I know it's late at night in the Ukraine, and you've been very kind to join us, and I could see your love for what you're doing. It's really great. Somebody said, well, why is he doing it if he doesn't play the games? You can love the games. You can want to bring the games back, and you can love the process of creating ScumVM without spending time playing the games. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Although I have a feeling we're going to lose Jono to seventh guest for a while here.
It may be gone. Yeah.
Play Microsoft Puzzle. We recently reintroduced original difficulty level because it's impossible puzzle.
Oh, the impossible level. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that was a really great game. I actually would love to play it again myself. Thank you, Eugene. We'll let you go to bed now.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Eugene.
And great work on Scum. That's fantastic.
Yeah, great work. Yeah.
Isn't it funny to say Scum? you've done well with the Scum.
I'm just cleaning up this pile of stuff over
Scum.
Here. Let me get my pool cleaner out.
I didn't ask him. Do you know what it stands for? SCU. I presume it's an acronym.
I think it's on the Wikipedia page. Says that on.
Let me see. ScumVM has its own wiki. Set of clumsy but universal multimedia related virtual machines. No. They have a bunch of. Different ones. Strict Club of Uber Majestic Mad Virtual Machines. Set of Cool Uber Merriment. Someday crowds will unload Mighty Mad and Valor Meltdown.
What?
This is on the wiki.
On the Scum Wikipedia page, though, it says script creation utility for Maniac Mansion. I would believe that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it all started with Maniac Mansion and went from there.
That's right. Yeah. All crazy stuff. I remember playing a few of these, but not this long list. I played some really early stuff before all this. And I actually downloaded the blue sky thing or whatever it was, the sky, and tried it, and I just got stuck at the first level. I had no idea what I was supposed to do.
These are hard. You have to be, it's like it's a whole genre, and you have to kind of know how to play these, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the way I play Tomb Raider is I have the cheat website open, and I play for about a minute and a half until I get stuck. And I try two or three times, and I go, and then I go look at the cheat website. So, because I want to just go through the whole environment. That's the whole point. And I don't care that I'm cheating to get through it. Same way I played Myst, same way I played everything else. I've got the cheat website.
You know, it's funny. I mean, these games are 20 years old, not much more. And it's as if it was ancient history. I mean, it's so, you know, the dim, dark past of computing. Yeah.
Well, in computer years, that's decades.
But a 20-year-old movie, you know, The Usual Suspects feels fresh. And, you know, I mean, there are plenty of great 20-year-old movies that don't feel like they're ancient history. And you can still see them, too, without an emulator, you know. I'm sorry. Yep. It's not an emulator. It's an engine.
Yeah, it seems that as computer history has got better, the world has developed fewer right angles. You know, everything was so pixelated back then.
Yeah, and, no kidding. Well, I mean, we're looking at the video. I don't know if you can see it, Jono, of Seventh Guest.
And, it's incredible.
It's got video in it, but boy, they really had to struggle, you know, to get it to work. I mean, and this is playing off a CD, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
So Eugene just IM'd me and said that GOG.com is where you can actually buy these games.
Oh, we didn't mention that. GOG.com.
GOG.com, and it's goodoldgames.com. So it's going to be all these old games available.
Ooh,
for
look, Judge Dredd. That was the Sylvester Stallone vehicle pick that never really went anywhere.
Yep. So
you can there's Beneath the Steel Sky for free. For free.
Yes,
Duke
exactly.
Nukem 3D. 3D. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I have that in a DOS box, you know. So, but that's pirating it, so I'm not going to do it. Fallout, yeah. That was a great game.
Yeah.
So they sell these games. Actually, you know, they're not even 20 years old. Fallout was 1997. These are 12 years ago.
Wow.
You know, I mean, wow. These are not that old, and yet they seem so dated.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in relation to our discussion earlier, I think that there are the kind of people for whom this game is actually a lot more engaging than, say, a first-person shooter. But I see the other side of that, which is that for some people, first-person shooter is exactly all they ever want. So it's fine.
Right.
It's great that there's both kinds of games available for that. And Jono, I do agree with your comment earlier, though, that there are some incredible deep story games. I mean, even if you just take the ones I've played, like Tomb Raider, there's a lot of story to that. There's a lot of things to do, a lot of richness to it, and a lot of thinking and puzzling through that, which is why I always have the cheat sheet up because I guess my
position is I don't think modern gamers want those tough games. They don't want those really challenging, difficult games.
Well, I think it depends. I think it depends because, for example, one of the biggest selling games today is Final Fantasy. And this is one of these kind of weird, you know, unicorns and tentacles and big eyes, Japanese kind of animation type thing. But these are huge. I mean, if you look at a lot of the games, I think the thing is that one of the problems we've got today is that there's so many first-person shooters that it's tempting to only see that's the only genre available. Whereas actually, as you can tell, I'm a bit of a gaming nerd. And I'm really, you know, there's quite a lot of variation in the genres now, but there's definitely, I mean, it started out back then. And, you know, what I thought was funny was when Eugene said, you know, everybody loves reading Shakespeare, and the three of us kind of shuffled uncomfortably.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time. I read it in the original Russian. And that's,
the
movies are fit. He made some great movies, the old Will did. Yeah.
That
was so good. But yeah, no, well, I mean, there were some modern movies that were like the different plays from Shakespeare. I forget what they were, from like the mid-90s or something. They were different to those. Those are okay.
Yeah, they're okay.
Yes. So we beat this to death. Can we talk about upcoming guests?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Well, just added to the schedule next week, I have Steve Coast, the guy who created OpenStreetMaps.
Oh, cool.
OpenStreetMaps is an open source database of essentially rebuilding using public data and using individually collected data that's been uploaded to the site about anywhere and everywhere on planet Earth. And the significance of this, actually the timely significance of this, is that when Yahoo didn't have accurate enough maps of Tehran to put online from the official sources, they actually switched over to using OpenStreetMaps for their Tehran maps.
I have a number of iPhone apps, like cycling apps and stuff, that use OpenStreetMap, actually.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him next week about all that. That'll be really cool. I'm really looking forward to that show. Just got added to the schedule because I wasn't actually sure if I could do a show next week or not. How would I dare break the cycle? Come on. But anyway, I didn't know. Coming up right after him, we've got Michael Ford of Iron Python, which I unfortunately a couple weeks ago said was Python on Java, and it's actually Python on .NET. So
I'm not sure which is worse, actually.
Did I get it right that time? Wait, now I can't remember which one.
They both sound horrible.
Please, chat room, tell me what it is.
It's on .NET. It's, yeah.
Okay, .NET, right.
Yep.
.NET, all right. So then we got Python on .NET, which actually I do want to talk to them about, and I'm looking forward to that conversation because I want to see, given that Python's a dynamic language and .NET with a common CLR, really was about static languages. So I want to see really how they had to modify and restrict Python to make it work on that. So that's pretty cool. Immediately after that, we've got Jeffrey Darlington and a couple of his friends talking. Jeffrey Darlington, in fact, is the creator of General Protection Fault Comics, GPF Comics. And they're going to talk about how they're using open source software to create those comics that a lot of you read every day online on the web and maybe even in some hard copy in your local newspaper. After that, we've got Eric Jung, who works for the Mozilla Project and works primarily on Foxy Proxy, which is the advanced proxy configuration software for Firefox. But he's also going to talk a lot about security and privacy and stuff. Actually, that'll tie well into our next week's talk about Tehran, so it'll be good. On the short list coming up right after that, still just about nailed down when Monty Wydenius is going to come in and talk about MySQL and MariaDB. He's on the very short list. We're just trying to get the slot in for him.
Great. Boy, you got a lot planned.
Oh, and I tell you, the 140 more names after that, I just got to figure out how many more months we want to keep doing this.
We want to do it forever, Randall Schwartz, forever.
And John, I want to thank you for coming on this week's show again and helping me out. I know you're not going to be available next week, but hopefully we'll see you again sometime after that.
Thank you.
Great having you on.
It's always good to have John on. Yep. Especially since he's an avid gamer.
Love it.
Do you have anything you want to plug, John?
The only piece of exciting news that I've really got is the fact that I just sent the book off to the publishers for printing. Woo! So the new book is complete, and it's got Leo's wistful words of wisdom in the forward.
I hope they weren't too wistful.
They were wistful and wise.
Wistful.
And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, and I do frequent live streaming on Ustream, karaoke sessions all the time. I'm just having a great time with that. Jono actually watched me do karaoke. Do you want to go public with that yet, that we're going to be doing some of that?
Yeah. So I was talking to Randall about this at OSCON that I thought, you know, he was banging on about all this karaoke, and I thought I should really go and check it out at some point. Because, you know, I was thinking at some point he's going to ask me about it, and I can't act dumb. So I went and watched
it. You could act dumb anyway.
And there was, when I watched it, there was some woman hollering into a microphone, and it sounded all right. It didn't sound particularly great. But then I saw some links to Randall singing, and I thought, this will be funny. And I watched it, and I have to say, I mean, I didn't think you'd have a bad voice, Randall, but your voice is just absolutely incredible. And he's got a real old blue eyes crooning kind of voice. And
we like to think of him as the Susan Boyle of open source, really.
it must be my webcam's not coming through very well again.
It's unexpected.
Oh my God.
You look at him and you go, what? And then out comes the voice of an angel.
Wow, am I going to have a nightmare tonight?
Or a frog, one of the
other. Hey, welcome to the frog here.
Seriously, for everybody who hasn't seen Randall's singing on his karaoke, go and check it out. He's a wonderful, wonderful singer. So
you could have another career, Randall, and maybe we should promote this thing. And,
well, Jono actually just talked about maybe laying down some tracks with him, so he might do some playing, I might do some singing, and we might actually put some stuff out together.
Exactly.
Would it be that the vegetarian death rock?
I was thinking maybe progressive vegetarian grindcore.
Okay. That's a genre that I think we don't have enough representative music from.
As long as you give me a lyric sheet and a tone sequence, I could probably do it. So yeah.
Do you know any Cannibal Corpse, Randall?
Let me go look that up. I don't think so.
All right, gentlemen, it's been grand. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all for joining us. You can watch Floss Weekly record live most days at 1:30 Pacific. That's 4:30 Eastern. It's, I think, 20:30 UTC at live.twit.tv on Wednesdays. So I hope you'll stop by and watch the live version of it. We'll get some video. We'll start getting some video out of this pretty soon, podcasts and so forth. But if you want to see the video, it's always fun.
It's only 20:30 Zulu for the summer.
That's right, summertime.
Because when the winter, it's 1930 Zulu. Let's not get too confused.
Please, it's so hard for me to do that math as it is. You're just making me nuts. You must have a Perl script that does this or something.
I deal with international time zones all the time. So, all right.
Thank you, Randall. Thank you, Jono, and thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.